Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Alrighty, hello, hello, and welcome to another Gegenpod. It's a new era. I feel like the Julian Nagelsmann of the Gegenpod. Claude's here hosting alongside with an all-star cast, Thomas Sorensen, Mark Schwarzer, and Michael Bridges. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. Firstly, good evening to Mark Schwarzer, who's joining us all the way from Spain. Mark, how are you?
Well, if I were joining you from Spain, I'd be a lot happier, but I'm back in the UK, mate.
Oh, you're back in the UK?
See, not only do you turn up half an hour late, you're still...
Well, look, these are the formalities. I don't actually care where you're dialing in from, if I'm completely honest with you, Mark. I'm going to go to the two guys who I can say good morning to. Tommy Sorensen, haven't seen you since the Euros. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Getting out of lockdown here in Melbourne, watching, a lot of great football. Great result this morning with the Arsenal Crystal Palace game. So, yeah, plenty to enjoy and now freedoms as well. Something I'm looking forward to.
See, that's a very respectable response. I have a feeling I'm going to be chatting a lot to you today and probably less to these other two. Michael Bridges, unfortunately, I'm joined by you once again. How are you, Bridgie?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. And I cannot believe that you have just introduced yourself as the new Nagelsmann. What a massive pumper that is. Wow. By the way, Nagelsmann, right, is good at his job. Nagelsmann dresses immaculate. And you, on the other hand, you're no good at your job and you've got an absolute shit shirt on.
Whoa. Easy on the shirt, buddy. The shirt is a good shirt. All right.
It's a classic Chelsea shirt. I'm just trying to give him some stick, keep him down on his station. Claude, we love you, mate. We love you, really.
But he's definitely not a Julian Nagelsmann because he doesn't turn up on time. Because Nagelsmann would turn up on time every time. There'd be no chance at all of him not turning up on time. And he rides a skateboard. I just can't see Claude's doing that.
Look, I just wore, firstly, skateboards before my time. I just thought I'd wear this jersey to remind you guys. You guys were playing professional football at the time, doing very well. I actually turned 2 years old when this jersey came out. Just wanted to remind you all of your age before we kick this off.
He's very good.
Bring back Dave Wiener, I say.
Good comeback, Claude. I love it.
Let's fly straight into it. Tommy touched on it. Massive game this morning. We were treated to Tuesday morning football, which we absolutely love. Arsenal at home to Crystal Palace. And it turned out to be a thriller, went right down to the end. Arsenal having to settle for a 2-2 draw. But I think the way the game ended up panning out, they'll take that, right, Thomas?
Yeah, I think they showed, again, what they've been showing for the last couple of weeks. Some, a bit of resistance. They're just a bit of character to keep going. I think they made it hard for themselves, obviously. Party being dispossessed, potentially a free kick. And then the second goal as well. They started well, got the early goal with Aubameyang. I thought they were good for that early on. And then Crystal Palace slowly just got into the game, grinded it out and took their chances. So for Arsenal to get that draw late on, I think it's a win for them as the game sort of went on.
Tommy, I've got to say, I never thought I would see an Arsenal team celebrate like they'd won the FA Cup when they get a draw against Crystal Palace. That's how much these two teams have turned around. I think Patrick Vieira and Crystal Palace, after going behind so early in this game, the way they came back and handled the situation and played, for me, the best football. And it was only that, I thought, that last little decision that Vieira made when he took Edouard off and went with a back five and a four and a one, and then they invited the pressure on. It was really the only time in the game, the last 8 minutes, that Arsenal really had anything out of it. The first 8 minutes and the last 8 minutes. So I credit Crystal Palace for the way they played, but and Patrick Vieira for his approach to the game, but that substitution, I just felt, killed the dynamics of Palace.
And Bridgie, that goal, the equaliser, Christian Benteke, there was question marks over the dispossession of Partey in midfield. I personally thought there was nothing wrong with it, but your take on that one?
How much did that remind you of a Patrick Vieira tackle? Yeah. That was him at his peak when he would win the ball back and you felt you got fouled. And I've got to credit Benteke as well, because I'm not a big fan, but the way he shifted the ball to get the shot away in the finish, I thought was superb. And for me, that decision was correct decision. I think we've seen it several times this season with the new letter of the law, and the referee, who was it? Was it Mike Dean?
Yeah.
Mike Dean was right on the spot, looking right at it. So for me, correct decision. And that's how we want to see the game played, with the pressure.
Schwartzy, there was another massive decision in the first half, which saw Saka come off at half time. James McArthur, the ball's coming down from the sky. He's looking like he's trying to attempt a volley, but he was very late, to say the least, caught the back of Saka's calf. He had to go off injured. How did you see that one? Was that just a clever player trying to play at the fact that there was a ball there to be played, or was it a genuine accident?
It seemed, yeah. I think, listen, he knows the whistle goes, but he's looking at the ball the whole time. I don't think he realizes that Saka comes in between him, because Saka comes in so late in between him and the ball. And by the time he realizes, he tries to get out of it. He tries to stop his swing. I mean, listen, it's a yellow card. I don't think in a million years it's a red card. I don't think it was intentional.
Schwartzy, that's a red card.
No, I don't think it is. Honestly,
Did you hear the VAR? Have you heard the explanation from the VAR?
No.
It was the highest. It was at the top end of the yellow card department. Just before a red card. So now the referees are looking at it to determine, is it a low end of the yellow card? Is it the high end of the yellow card? I've never heard so much crap in all my life. And Ian Wright...
No, all that means, obviously, is it, that it's borderline red card, but they still deem it to be yellow. I don't think it's a red at all. I just don't think he's... The intention is he's got his eye on the ball the whole time, and it isn't until he sees Saka come across his line of view, when it's basically too late, he tries to still pull out of it.
Tommy, do you want to settle this one?
I must say, I agree with Schwartzy. You know, again, it is one of them. It could fall either way, but you know, we want to keep people on the pitch, and if it's not intentional, and I think that's the key for me, then he deserves to stay on the pitch.
And all in all, it's a pretty solid result for Crystal Palace. They look like a completely different side to the one that we saw on opening day against Chelsea. 5 draws for them, though. They've struggled to put games to bed. Arsenal, however, sit in 12th position. They've only scored 7 goals this season. To put that into context, Newcastle have scored more goals than Arsenal this season. When we're looking at that, I think they have really shored up that defence before today. But is the problem for Arsenal really going forward? Aubameyang scored today, silenced a few of his critics, but is that where Arteta's biggest worries are, Bridgie?
I think his biggest worries is when he won the Manager of the Month and the dreaded curse. You know, they had a fantastic few results. Me and Tommy were talking about it on the last gig in pod, how I felt that he deserved that award for the amount, you know, 4 wins, the 3 clean sheets, but it was going to be the dreaded curse. I think defensively, they're definitely better. The goalkeeper Ramsdale, Gabriel and Ben White, I feel that partnership has been great, and I love Tierney. I love what he's all about. Thomas Partey again in that defensive role, fantastic, but the final product today, Smith Rowe didn't do enough for me, Saka didn't do enough for me, and Aubameyang in the first 20 minutes, he was the only one that really looked up for it in that final third, and Lacazette came on. So I think he's found the balance defensively, definitely. Going forward, there's a lot of the players have got to stand up and be accountable, I think, for Arsenal to find the back of the net and not take their foot off the gas when they went 1-0 up.
I think they need a lot more from Odegaard as well. I think he's just floats in and out of games too little. For a player that is their kind of ball player, their playmaker, he just doesn't influence the game enough, often enough, at this moment in time.
Yeah, and I think we also saw the difference when Lacazette came on. I think he made a difference. You know, he just gave him a little bit of physicality to stand up to. You know, they are solid at the back, Crystal Palace. So I think he made the difference for them.
He gave him energy. Yeah. I thought he gave him energy when he came on. Yeah.
They got a quick turnaround themselves. They've got a Saturday morning game coming up that we're going to talk about later on. But a little fact as well that I heard this morning is that Aubameyang scored 9 goals in 10 Monday evening matches in the Premier League. So, you know, Arsenal fans, they love to clutch at any straw that they can. Apparently, he's very good on a Monday night, so they should be scheduling more of those, gentlemen.
I used to be good on a Wednesday night at Leeds United because it was student night in Leeds and we always went out together. I was on fire.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say that otherwise, something along those lines about you being the first to the bar or something like that, or the last.
I was never the first to the bar, Sporty. I always kept my money in my pocket, but I was always always out for a student night.
Yeah, you're a northerner. Of course you keep your hands in your pocket the whole time. You're a northerner. What do you expect?
Here we go. Bring it on.
Early days. Jeez, early yellow there for Schwartzy. Moving on, though, Arsenal Palace, 2-2. Both teams sitting in the bottom half of the table. It'll be interesting to see where they finish late on. Do we think... I mean, Arsenal, surely anything less than the top 10 has got to be a failure this season, right?
I can't believe you're talking about top 10. That's a great season.
That's made my season already. That comment there, it was like Arsenal in the top 10. Keep that. That is gold. Absolute gold. That's your best work, Claude.
Okay, so will Arsenal make the top 10?
Will they make the 10?
Of course they will.
I think that's what the Gronk is. I think that's their target for the season, I think.
I don't know about that. There's some top sides up there. Yeah, you're forgetting about your Leicesters, your Wolves, Brentford, Everton. Come on. I mean, it's not as easy as it once was. But
But you're right. Like, listen, Brighton's had an amazing start to the season. I mean, listen, they could be the outlier that goes on for the season as have an unbelievable season. They play some good football, but we've talked about it before. I think they'll run out of goals. They just don't have the firepower. If you look at the teams in that top 10 currently, Leicester are actually 11th. So we envisage Leicester to be in there. I don't think Brentford will be there. I think Brentford will be just below, you know, mid-table. West Ham look like they're not going anywhere. They look like they're going to be knocking on the door again for finishing in you know, trying to get on those European places. And Manchester United, who knows what's going to happen with Manchester United, but quality that they have, they should be far better. I mean, there's six at the moment. They've dropped down, but they should be better. They should be right up there.
And not forgetting Burnley, of course, because they've got Coney, so he can give them a massive spike into the top off the table. So what's his favourite?
I think there's still more to come from him, mate.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, we hope so.
Well, time will tell, gents. It's early days, but I do want to talk about the Saturday night game that we were treated to on the weekend. It was Claudio Ranieri's first game in charge of Watford. Schwartz, he didn't hold back on Ranieri last week, where he thought maybe he'd last max 10 weeks or so. And it hasn't started very well for him. 5-0 Liverpool. It reminded me of that result 3 years ago when Liverpool also put 5 past them. Salah scored 4 on that day. He only scored 1 here, but it was a worldie. Guys, is he the best player in the world?
I thought they were unlucky, Watford.
you're the best. I absolutely love you.
What a stand-up comedian.
It was, Salah. There is nobody better at this moment in time in the world.
Yes, is he right now the best player?
Yes.
Isn't it hard? It's a hard one because I think...
Lewandowski's on fire.
Yeah, no, but I think it's really hard to say he's the best player in the world at the moment. It's hard to get your head around saying it because we're so used to having Ronaldo and Messi, right? So they had more of a complete game. When I say more complete game, they would dribble, take on players. I think more flamboyant, more appeal. I don't know.
But maybe what Mo's doing at this moment in time, Schwartzy, every week is producing world-class goals world-class performances. So the only one that I see standing out when we're trying to watch as much football around the world as we can is you just see Lewandowski's name on the score sheet all the time. And you're a massive follower of the Bundesliga. I cannot see. Messi's not doing that for PSG. Ronaldo's not doing it for Man United. So for me, Salah is the absolute standout. And I really feel for Liverpool. I keep stressing it enough. How can you... replace him and Mane when they go off to the African Nations Cup, but that's not the topic. It's just Salah is the best in the world. Yes.
Yeah, but Bridget, in my view, you can't judge a player as being world best on a week to week basis. Like it has to be on a, you know, on a at least 6 month basis. I'm not saying that he hasn't been, but you know, if you talk about Ballon d'Or, he's not in the top 5 in my record.
Can you be the best in the world in one season? So, like, you know what I mean? Like, does anyone ever... Has anyone ever
that's
been...
That's why you get the Ballon d'Or awards.
No, but hang on. Just because you win the Ballon d'Or, does that mean you are the best player in the world?
Well, it means you've had a massive impact over that year, so yes.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But is it necessary you are the best player? I mean, there's a lot of debate over the years to say, well, Ronaldo got it 1 year, Messi got it the other year. Other players missed out. I think it's
refreshing we're actually discussing this, knowing that Ronaldo and Messi are kind of in the running but out of it when you have other
Ronaldo,
players that are...
For me, Ronaldo is nowhere near the running, you know, because of the start or the way the last couple of weeks have gone. Messi's obviously nowhere near it as well since he's left Barcelona. He hasn't had the impact at PSG.
Well, Claude's had an unbelievable start the other week and he was showing it on Optus, and it was about Didier Drogba being... The amount of goals Didier Drogba scored and in the amount of games he did it. And I think Salah has got the more or the equal amount in like
80 odd games fewer.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. No.
But what is the criteria though? You know, is it stats? Is it accolades? Is it trophies?
Performances. He's a joy to watch.
Yeah, but you know, definitely the Ballon d'Or. It's you know as well that there's political. You know, there's also now Messi's one of the favorites because he won the Copa America, his first sort of international trophy. You know, and then does that make him the best in the world?
For Paris Saint Germain at the moment as well.
No, but you know what I mean. No, what I was trying to say before is the marketability, the appeal, the general appeal of Messi over and Ronaldo over Salah, for example. Because the fact that people are even having debate this, and the fact that Klopp is coming out and banging the drum, having to convince people almost that Salah's the best player in the world. That's the thing that is surprising. Why are we sitting here going, having this conversation, really? We all should be saying straight away, yeah, he's the best player in the world by a mile. But we have doubts.
I don't.
But Swazi, do you also think that Klopp is playing a little bit of a political game with the contract negotiations and, you know, get as many pluses in with Salah as well? Or that is none, that's not...
Because the understanding is that Klopp has nothing to do with the negotiations, obviously, that aspect of it, right? So he'll give the go-ahead about whether he signs a player or doesn't want a player, of course. So, yeah, maybe it's his way of trying to push the club and put more pressure on the club. But back to the overall question, is he the best player right now on the planet? It's hard to think of anyone else who's... Lewandowski is the only one, but then if you break it down... Sorry?
Can I throw Benzema in there?
In the same way...
We are the old school. Let's go to the new breed, the new Nagelsmann. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because in the same week, Zidane came out and said Benzema should win the Ballon d'Or, especially now that he's won a national trophy with France. And Nagelsmann, actually, funny you mentioned him, came out as well last week and said that Lewandowski has to win this one because the Ballon d'Or criteria came out. And as well as your performance this season, off-field behavior is actually a category that they judge and also overall career.
Icardi can't get that.
Icardi can't get it. He's probably coming up later in the show. And even Benzema, you'd say, just got back into the French squad. Yeah. He probably can't get it. And Lewandowski was, let's be real, robbed of it last year when they canceled the Ballon d'Or. So I think it's his to lose.
And if you think about Lewandowski's record over the last probably, 5 or 6 years? I mean, Salah's been incredible the last 3 years, right? The stats. But if you look at Lewandowski, I think he's been long over a longer period of time, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And, but in an easier league.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the thing about it is as well, you say that, but he also does it in the Champions League. And
does he do it in national level?
Not to the same level, but he still scores. But then he's playing for Poland. So if you look at his teammates, does Salah do it? What is Salah's return? That's the other question.
Yeah.
What's Salah's return for Egypt? I'm not sure. I'm asking the question.
It actually isn't the best, his return for Egypt. And I think it's tough for a lot of the players when they go play in African qualifying.
Yeah.
A lot of them struggle from England. And on that point, when you're talking a Ballon d'Or in an international football season, a lot of the times when there is a Copa America or a Euro, they're usually the ones that get the favour. Salah hasn't been able to play at an international tournament this year for Egypt, and I think that's hurt his chances, whereas Messi's won with Argentina. Bridgie reckons Jorginho will win it. I mean, he's won with Italy.
Well... Yeah, he's another one. Yeah, he's obviously a massive one as well. People have been banging on about Jorginho.
Champions League, Europa.
Yeah. Yeah, European champions, Champions League winner.
And look how much we got sidetracked from one question, Claude.
I know.
It obviously all relates in terms of Jorginho and whether or not he's now in the frame. Yeah, listen, I think it's a close race between three of them. Lewandowski, Jorginho, and Salah. And to be fair, if any of them win it, I think you kind of go, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but I would still throw Benzema in there, even though he's a late runner. But you know, he scored 30 goals last season. He scored 10 goals this season. He's just won the Nations League with France, scoring in the final. I don't think you can count him out. Like he's been very, very consistent over the last year.
Tommy, are you representing him? Are you his agent or something?
Yeah.
No.
Just checking. Sorry, mate.
Have you got shares or something?
You know, we're comparing. He's scoring nearly as frequently as Lewandowski, and he's got an international trophy. You know, I don't think you can count him out for sure.
Look, yeah. When we're talking Ballon d'Ors, what I'm going to say is that, look, Liverpool did smash Watford. We started there. And I think it's obvious to say Liverpool are flying high. They're looking really good. Salah's absolutely smashing it. Huge work for Ranieri to do. But I'm going to take this opportunity, talking Ballon d'Or nominees, to mention someone, Edouard Mendy, who was left out of the Ballon d'Or nominations. And Koulibaly came out during the week smashing that because Gianluigi Donnarumma was listed in the top 30 and Edouard Mendy was left out. He was brilliant on the weekend. Schwartzy, Tommy, is this just goalkeeper getting disrespected here?
No, but he's nominated for the Lev Yashin Award, yeah?
Yeah, but just not the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Donnarumma. Yeah, because like go back to what you said before, Claude's European Championship, major tournament. Mm-hmm. No African nations in the meantime. So therefore, Italy have won it. He played a big part in the penalty shootout. I thought he was the best player in the best goalkeeper in the European Championships by some margin. You kind of understand why he's included. The question is, why is it Mendy included? And that is a valid question. I mean,
if Donnarumma is the only keeper that is nominated for the Ballon d'Or, does that automatically mean he wins the Yashin Trophy?
Well, exactly. That's you would think that's the case, isn't it? Really, because how does one get nominated for one thing and no one else does is it in that position? You're right. Yeah. That's a very
clever analysis from the new man on the block. Love it. Love your thinking.
Yeah, but I still think they're voted on differently. So again, that doesn't guarantee you.
They are anything. Yeah.
And also think the Ballon d'Or, it tends to be skewed to attacking players. You know, again,
as it should be.
Good one, Bridgie. You know, again, I think that's just the way it's been. You know, they're the headline grappers. They're the big stars on paper. Thankfully now we're seeing the value of goalkeepers over the last 5-6 years have skyrocketed. Defenders as well. I think in sort of the media, the value of those players, Van Dijk, we've seen what he has done to Liverpool. We see what lacking of centre halves is doing to Man United. So I think they're getting the respect, but it's still skewed in my view.
Well, Edouard Mendy was brilliant on the weekend. Let's go into that game. Brentford at home to Chelsea. Chelsea managed to snag a 1-0 win. Bridgie, Chelsea had one shot on target in the entire match. They won the game, but is that cause for concern for Blues fans?
I don't think it's cause for concern at all because they got the result at the end of the day and they managed to grind it out. And if you've got to rely on, you know, if it's not happening in the final third, like I say, Lukaku again, a very disappointing, got dragged this time. He's hold up place. And yeah, just ran out of ideas. And it was the defensive unit and that man Mendy that came up with the goods on this occasion. It's not the first time. So if they'd have lost that game, yeah, definitely I'd be saying I'd be worried. But they hung on, they got the results. And I see if they're playing bad and they're winning games, and I see Man United playing bad and they're losing games in the way they did, they fell apart defensively. The organisation, they were blaming each other. Chelsea hung it together and celebrated at the end, rightly so. And everybody went to Mendy.
And can we give credit to Kel for his lineup? You know, playing with Chalobah and Saar alongside Christensen and then Loftus-Cheek in a holding midfield role. And I think it's a, you know, just a big statement for the discipline and the system that he's installed there. You know, that he can change players and it still works. You know, they're still as solid as ever. And Mendy had a great game, but they still played 2-0 and still won the game. So I think that's credit to Tuchel for sure.
It's a two different tactics, isn't it? So like when Liverpool went there, they went toe-to-toe, went, right, okay, we're Liverpool. We're going to play this offensive in your face, close you down and go for it. And we're going to outscore you effectively, you know? Having one of the best center halves in the world as well. We're going to hopefully not concede one of the best goalkeepers or not concede as many. And then obviously they've come unstuck by Brentford because of the atmosphere, the determination, the work ethic of the Brentford side, which is incredibly impressive. Chelsea were never going to do that. Chelsea don't play that way. They often are happy to grind out 1-0 results. So I think for Chelsea, it was a result that you kind of thought that if anyone's going to do it, they're going to do it, especially out of the top four or five teams, I think.
And again, Frank and Brentford, I thought was fantastic what they did, where they, you know, threw caution to the wind, didn't just accept it and went for it and really, again, showcased themselves that they belong in the Premier League with this style of play. So, yeah, it's not been an easy ride for anybody that's played Brentford, and Chelsea come away unscathed.
Did you tip them to get relegated?
I did, yes, Brentford. Definitely. Yeah, I did. So. And do you know what it is? I'm happy to eat humble pie and say they have blown me away. And I am absolutely delighted to see how well they're doing because of the style they're playing.
I also said I thought that Crystal Palace would get relegated.
Ooh. the experts are honking.
No, but mind you, I did say Norwich. I've forgotten now. I said Norwich.
Burnley?
Crystal Palace. No. Burnley is staying up, mate, all day long. There's no way in the world they're getting relegated.
Are they still in the Premier League, Burnley? God, Jesus. I got to put
Well, Schwartzy, you've just said earlier in the show you think Brentford are slipping way out of the top 10. There was a super...
No, I didn't say way out of the top 10. I said they're not going to finish... I don't think they're going to finish top 10. Mid-table, just probably below mid-table.
Well, there was a supercomputer which took all the statistics of Premier League seasons, predicted Brentford to finish fourth this season. Don't know how much...
Watford was my other team. Sorry, Watford was the other team that I said really good. Watford, Norwich and Palace, I said.
Two out of three, maybe.
Well, that's why there's a need for computers in the modern day game and stats and things, but that's why computers cannot really put a personal eye on the performances as a team and players. That's why, you know, all this scouting where it's gone computer generated, you still need the smell and taste and breathe it with the scouts.
Yeah, great result nonetheless for them. And Mbeumo hits the post twice. He becomes the unluckiest player in the Premier League.
How many is that now? Is that six?
Six times so far this season, but he's getting in the right positions. There's no.
So is that unlucky, or is it just he's obviously his eye's not right. He
needs what me and you wear, mate. Glasses.
I know.
Bridgie, you mentioned Man United and the fact that Chelsea can grind out results, Man United can't. It was a completely different game. Thomas, 40 shots in this one, 22 for Leicester, 18 for Man United. It was a great game all around. What were your biggest takings from this? Was this just Leicester being too good or United not good enough?
Definitely United not being good enough, not being ruthless enough. I think they're definitely struggling in midfield, trying to find the right combination. Fred, McTominay, obviously in this game, it was Pogba and Matic. I'm just lacking pace. I'm lacking effort at times, positioning. And then, you know, obviously they keep killing themselves with mistakes. You know, Maguire for the first goal, obviously. I don't know what he's doing. For the second goal as well, you know, his positioning, he's actually doing the right thing to start with. You know, going out to Vardy, and then he drops back into the line, and that gives Vardy the space to obviously finish it well. But it's just bad defending. Again, the set pieces hurting them. I think you look at the effort. You know, I'm just looking, do they really want to hit the ball? Do they really want to clear it? It's sort of half attempt. And at this level, you can't just rely on Greenwood popping up with worldies and Ronaldo, you know, digging you out of trouble, and Fernandes. You know, you got to be a unit. You got to play as a team. And I think at the moment, too many people are not playing at the level they should be and with the effort they should put on the field.
I think also you've got to look at the way that United is set up. Ronaldo up front, Fernandes and Sancho. The only one out of that knows how to close down is Sancho, because he did it at Dortmund and he did it really, really well. Ronaldo's not going to do it. That's not part of his game. He doesn't do that anymore. Fernandes, he can do it, but they didn't do it. He'll look at Ronaldo and Ronaldo wasn't doing it, so he drops off. The amount of times you see in that second half in particular where United were attacking with five players, the gap between the five attackers and the five defenders was incredible.
There was a massive hole, wasn't there?
Massive hole. Yeah. And it's easy. I mean, I've dug Pogba out and I'm not a big fan of him, but I don't think you can also blame Pogba necessarily. I think it starts from right up the front. You know, defensively, you're only as good as, you know, you, right at the front where it starts. And if those guys are not doing the work, which they're not, Greenwood as well.
Schwartzy, I'm going to take it one step further. You're saying the Greenwood and the players. I'm taking it one step further. I see a Tuchel and I see a Klopp and I see a Pep Guardiola. Yeah. I'm taking it one step further. I'm going for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Do they have the dynamics and the structure and the nous that he has got his message over to his players of what he actually wants? Because defensively, for me, it looks disorganized, and it almost looks like every player is playing off the cuff. And that, what I mean is, like, just go out and play. Yeah. I do not see a team dynamics or organization.
No, I agree with you. And I think that part of the issue is either he hasn't told them, he hasn't said to them, right, we're going to close down. And if he has, he's either afraid to or hasn't felt that he could say to them, right, this is how I want to do it. And if he doesn't do it, I'm going to take him off. At the moment, he's trying to keep everyone happy. I mean, you know, if you look at obviously bringing Ronaldo in, he's going to play, and he didn't play him in that one game and they get beaten. He takes him off in the Europa League game, they get beaten. And so he's bang under pressure in that regard already. So I think there's far too many players who are doing too little. So for example, Mason Greenwood, right? His tracking was horrendous. But then he's looking at Pogba. He's looking at Ronaldo. He's looking at Fernandes and going, well, they're not working. Why do I have to work? You know, it's a knock-on effect for me. It's obviously not being taught to them, and they're not being demanded from them. No one's demanding it from them at all. And it's blatantly obvious. And I think on the weekend it was actually highlighted even more because they came up against a side like Leicester who hold the ball really well, play the ball really well, good movement, little drops in the pocket. And actually, if anything, United made it easy for him.
And I've got to say, Tommy mentioned the midfield of Manchester United. Just a quick comment. If you're talking about best players in the world of one-game performances, Tillisman, my God, he was amazing.
Yeah, but he's not. It's also not one game, though, is it? I mean, I'm not saying he's the best player in the world, but he is up there with becoming world class. He's a top class player. The question is for him, this is going a bit sidetracked, is whether or not he needs to go elsewhere to become truly top class.
Yeah, he was brilliant. And he made the most of that Maguire era. Harry Maguire apparently asking for £300,000 a week on his new contract. And I think after a game like that, he'd probably have to take a zero off. But chatting about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and he's got a crazy 5 matches coming up. He's got to play Atalanta home and away in the Champions League.
That's 3 points, easy.
He's got to play. He's
six
got to
points,
play.
Sorry.
Liverpool, what, Farmers League in your opinion, Schwartzy?
Hey, you said that, not me. Why are you calling the Italian League Farmers League?
Rubbish, mate. You watch Atalanta teach him a lesson of football, man.
No, okay. They probably will. They're a good side.
And then he's got Liverpool, Tottenham and Man City coming up in domestic football too. Yeah. What would it take? Apparently he's got the backing of the board, but Tommy, what would it take in these next 5 games to see him gone in the next month?
You know, I think there's two ways of looking at it. Either you sort of say, oh, that's the doom of Solskjaer, or you see it as an opportunity to turn the season around. Obviously, I think that the Liverpool game is it's huge. He needs to find a way to win that game. They're playing at home. Whatever it takes, is it being more solid, you know, playing on a counter, you know, whatever it takes, he needs to come up with a plan that can win that game for with all costs. So he needs to put out that team, and they got to work on, does it take a specific game plan just for that? You know, I don't think that matters. I think for him now, it's about results. And you know, those 3 games could be the end of him for sure if he doesn't get anything out of it.
I agree. It's make or break. It could be well done or it's goodbye.
So you guys reckon he could get the sack?
Yeah.
If they get beat by Atalanta or twice, I don't think they'll beat Liverpool. They will not beat Man City. The only game I can see them getting any joy out of is a Tottenham game. If the draw lose that one, mate, if you're losing, four
all
games?
All I'm saying is don't underestimate the Manchester derby.
What I'm saying is
throw the whole form got out the window. I've seen it time and time again. It didn't matter which team was in form necessarily. They weren't necessarily guaranteed to win it. It's a different game altogether.
But you, if he loses 4 games out of them 5, what do you think then, Schwartzy?
I don't know. I'm just listening to, you know, tonight, listening to Gary Neville, for example, talk about it. And obviously he's very much Manchester United. And you know, they're all the opinion that he'll be there come the end of the season. Obviously, barring an absolute disaster and even losing 4 out of those 5 games is obviously horrendous. But I don't think in the context of overall the course of the season, that's going to define it necessarily. I don't know. I've said it before. I thought probably a year ago, I thought he'd be gone before Christmas. and it didn't happen. So I'm not so sure. I probably got this wrong now. He probably will be gone before Christmas. I'm thinking more he'll be there close enough to the end of the season.
Will he last longer than Ranieri?
Yeah. That's a no-brainer.
Tommy, you had something to say?
But if we sit here and say that, you highlighted as well, the lack of discipline, the lack of tactics, directions from management. If we sit here and say that the difference between Man United, not player for player, but it's the manager compared to Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea. Surely that's the reason to change a manager. Surely that's correct. The reason to get someone in, because that's going to hold them back. That's not going to change. If he's had plenty of time. So if that's the things we see now, you know.
I mean, the squad is frightening, and how you can't get something out of that.
Yeah. But if just because you and I and the broader public think that way or see that, doesn't mean they're going to necessarily change it. You know, the relationship between the board and, you know, the owner of the board, whatever, and Solskjaer is completely different. And, you know, building for the future, they've had the big names in Van Gaal and Mourinho and success. That was guaranteed success. That even with the success, Jose Mourinho was more successful than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in terms of return of trophies, and he lost his job. So for me, the way that Ole goes before the end of the season is if players turn on him, if Ronaldo turns on him, if all these other people say, listen, love the guy, but we're not going anywhere with him. And Ronaldo's at that, I'm not saying that Ronaldo's going to do this, but he's at that stage in his career, Cavani, Ronaldo, there's quite a few of them, Varane, they need to start winning things now or continue to win things now. They can't wait another year or two.
Yeah, no doubt. Ollie's under pressure, and Brendan Rodgers before this match was under, I think, a tiny little bit of pressure, seeing as they were sitting around 13th, 14th in the ladder.
Not from Leicester.
Not his job, but there were people criticising them a little bit this season. He actually, I thought, showed a lot of his prowess with his changes as well. You had Perez coming in, Daka coming in. They both accounted for 2 assists and a goal late in that game. And he's been linked with a move to Newcastle now, which surely that's rubbish. I mean, he's doing a great job at Leicester. Do you think realistically he could be the man to move to Newcastle?
No, he's not going. He's already said it.
Can't happen.
He said he's actually been, he pretty much ruled himself out and said, listen, I am here at Leicester. I've got a contract till 2025. I love working here. I'm honoured to be here, and I don't see anything changing. So he hasn't left the door open at all, or as opposed to you listen to what Steven Gerrard said. He's not distanced himself, hasn't put a stop to it. So the minute Brendan Rodgers made those comments, I mean, the bookmakers stopped. They basically put him right out there and saying there's no chance he's going to become Newcastle manager. I don't think why would he go there? I mean, listen, Leicester City, the project, the management, the owner of the club, I think it's almost a dream job in so many ways. I mean, you know, the next step for Brendan Rodgers is in Man City or somewhere like that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, Newcastle ruled out there, but as you mentioned, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Antonio Conte, there's managers flying left, right and centre. They lost 3-2 at home to Tottenham on the weekend. You almost got a feel for Steve Bruce. It's like he's watching his wife go out on dates with other men. He's got potential candidates left, right and centre to replace him, but he's got to still do his job on the weekend. 1,000th Premier League match. Started well. Probably a bit of a train wreck from that point on. What'd you make of Newcastle, Bridgie?
What I make of them, the atmosphere, I've got to say, and in that ground was just electric. It was great to see St. James's Park bouncing again with the belief. And, you know, speaking of friends and family back home, it was just the buzz the whole week around the whole of the region. So that was huge. And they got the perfect start. I mean, Callum Wilson, the stage was set for that. And Callum Wilson, a Newcastle number nine, probably only one of two guys that are safe at Newcastle United this moment in time, him and Maximum, they, you know, linking up and getting the goal, I thought was very, very fitting. But same question marks around Newcastle going ahead, the amount of times that Newcastle have gone ahead under Steve Bruce and ended up losing matches is frightening. They show that they haven't got that characteristic in them. And again, they, you know, Tottenham found a way to get back, as they would do with the quality that they possess. And I really felt for the owners. I think it would have been fitting to get a win or a draw. And I think the only plus to come out of this, that there was a fan had his life saved by a doctor in the crowd, who I thought did an absolutely amazing job doing CPR. And Reguilón, the fullback, stopping the game to make sure that they got the defibrillator from the bench. I mean, that's the standout moment from this game. But like I say, I'm still very disappointed with Newcastle. They need a change, and it will be coming from the manager. There's no doubt about it. I think I called it, Claude. I said he wouldn't be there for his 1,000th game. I've heard rumours. Obviously, they haven't found the right person yet. They're still talking, and it's inevitable that he will be gone.
Did you get excited when Harry Kane scored?
Did I ever? He's back into my Valentine's cards again. He's back in the love child department, mate.
Is that going to kickstart his season now?
Oh, I'm not getting into that. Yes, of course it will.
Tommy, you heard it there. Newcastle, they're still winless, but they're taking all the headlines. I was actually looking for some breaking news this morning. All I could get was just ridiculous transfer rumours. Everyone linked with Newcastle at the moment. Who is the man to replace? Because is this, do you go after an Antonio Conte or a huge name like that? Can you really attract them when you're sitting in the relegation zone, or does it have to be almost a middle ground with a Gerrard or a Lampard there?
You know, the more I've thought about it, we talked about it last week, and Bridget actually made a good point. You know, I think looking at the table, they can't just sit back. They need points. And I think short term, if that's a couple of years, I think Conte, they need someone who can, like Bridget said, kick them up the ass, you know, get them.
And yeah, and then, you know, just get the points needed until they get to January. I think that's has to happen. Obviously, Steve Bruce is not the man long term, so they need to get him out. I think, and yeah, Conte, I think, will be a good man. But who's available right now? I think that's the question.
Yeah, the other rumor in the last couple of hours is Wayne Rooney, apparently, as well, is on a short list.
No.
Are you having a laugh?
I did.
No, I'm telling you, there's apparently close sources to the club are saying there's a short list.
Man, and Wayne doesn't even know. Wayne wouldn't know how to switch a laptop on, mate, let alone put it into the wall.
Schwartz, can I just say that my former agent, he's the agent of Rooney. He's the agent of Maguire. If he gets Maguire 300,000 and he gets Rooney in at a Newcastle, I'll start believing wizards, mate. You know, he needs a medal.
I've seen some players making moves in their careers, actually all their moves in their careers, and having played with them, and then just going, how is that even possible? And then knowing who their agent was and just thinking the guy is an absolute miracle.
Tommy,
my agent, Paul Stretford, was my former agent, you know, he's got good ties with Newcastle.
Can you give me his number, please, Tommy?
After the show, Bridget, I'm
struggling to get a job in the A-League, let alone get Newcastle United like Rooney, mate. So give us his number, please.
And the other big rumor is supposedly Jesse Lingard's people are up at Newcastle talking.
Oh, that makes sense,
doesn't it? That's a good sign. Yeah. They've got to be the players that they're looking for initially, right? The ones that are outcasts or sitting on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bunch of them. I think January is a really interesting time for someone like Newcastle. I think like Lacazette, Jesse Lingard, there's a few players just off the top of my head that I can remember.
I've heard that they want Calvin Phillips as well. That's the number one go-to man.
Yeah, but look at Leeds United. They can't play without him.
I know they can't switch, but at the end of the day, they can't afford to spend what they need to keep him.
Aren't they missing him? And another game I wanted to mention, Schwartz's second favourite club, Burnley. They were done 2-0 by Man City. We find ourselves not really talking about City because they win games and you just expect them to win. 71% possession. They leaves Burnley, Newcastle and Norwich all winless. I wanted to ask you guys, could that potentially be the bottom three come May, or Newcastle definitely getting out of there?
Newcastle are getting out of there. And I've put on my a bit of a maroon or claret, whatever you want to call it, jumper, just to show the support for Burnley, because I hammer them every week on the show. I thought they, after going 1-0 down, I thought they held their own defensively, very, very structured. You're never going to win possession against Pep. And I thought, Sean Dyche, I have a go at Burnley for their lack of ambition at the top end. But for what Sean Dyche has done and what Burnley are all about, I give them credit, but I really feel for them this season. I think this could be curtains for them in Norwich. Newcastle will get out of that.
And City, for them, they another 2-0 win. They're sitting in a good position in touching distance of the title. Are they Premier League title favourites from what we've seen in recent weeks?
They're up there, of course. I think it's too hard. I mean, listen, City are going quietly about their job really now. It's funny, isn't it? The only kind of real headlines you're getting out of City at the moment is what's happened to Raheem Sterling and how, fall from grace from being such an integral part of their side to now hardly getting any game time. And all the attention seems to be obviously what's happening over at United. So it's a nice distraction, I think, for City. It's going to be, for me, again, we said it early on in the season, I still don't think it's going to be any different. I think there's going to be a race to the end of the season, or hopefully to the end of the season, between the current top three. That's Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City.
Are City still a striker away from being the favourites to win the Prem, or can they win it the way they are now?
I think January is going to be interesting. There's small rumours, obviously, about Haaland. That there's at least something going on in the background.
I think he'll definitely sign in January, Tommy, on the Bosman.
Yeah, so
well, not the Bosman, that buyout clause for the next season.
Where did that come from?
Sorry, for the buyout clause for next season. So I don't think they'll get him in January, but it'll be settled.
That's what I thought.
He'll go in the summer.
That's what I thought as well, yeah.
Yeah, but again, that's obviously talking next season then. But, I think they're setting themselves up. And I think a striker would tip them into the favourite role. But I think at the moment it's touch and go. It's whoever is on form, really.
I'd love to see them go all out and spend in January. Sign Haaland for the following season. But just go out and see if they could potentially twist the hand of Bayern Munich to get Lewandowski in the Premier League.
Oh, imagine that. That'd be unbelievable.
Cool. Both of them. You just fleece the Bundesliga.
Yeah, but one of them to actually Lewandowski could join in January. I think that would be marvellous. So then what would happen? You've taken Bayern Munich's best striker away from them, knowing that Haaland can probably have a chance to win the Bundesliga with Dortmund and he stays for that season, and then get both of them in for the final year.
Imagine being Lewandowski right now, right? I mean, even he's a tender young age. What is he, 34 or whatever it is? And I mean, when is his contract up? I actually think is his contract up at the end of the season, Lewandowski's? Got maybe one more year. His contract's not that far away. So imagine he's going to have, I mean, he's been linked with Real Madrid. There's a whole host of teams because you'd be mad not to want to get him.
Yeah. He's going to be an instant impact. And you talk about agents and what an impact they can have on it. Erling Haaland, we know who his agent is, Mino Raiola, and he's quite vocal about it as well.
He's not vocal. He doesn't say a word. He goes quietly about his job. Don't even know who he is.
So one thing's for sure, I don't know where he's going to go, but there'll be headlines surrounding it. I'll take that chance to maybe step away from the Premier League for a second. We're going to come back soon, but it is Chelsea, Liverpool, City, divided by 2 points, and Brighton in fourth place still. They're hanging in there a little bit longer. Love to see it. Graham Potter's doing a great job. But we'll go to Germany. Schwartzy, I know you cop a bit of stick here about the Bundesliga, but this is the example. I mean, Bayer Leverkusen, we had the same thing happen last season where Leverkusen are in second place. They're hosting Bayern Munich. This is the game, top two, and Bayern go five up after about 35 minutes. Is that what's wrong with the league, or are Bayern just way too good?
Yeah, no, listen, I think one team dominating the league every year is not a great thing. Mm. It really isn't. I mean, it kind of gets a bit boring in a way. I mean, the thing about the Bundesliga, I actually don't think, if you're interested in watching it, I don't find it as boring, even though you think, Bayern will run away with it. They're not necessarily running away with it. I mean, they're only 1 point clear at the moment. So they have lost a game. They lost at home to Eintracht Frankfurt, and then Eintracht Frankfurt go and get beaten on the weekend at home against Hertha Berlin, which is ridiculous, really, on paper, on form. So Bayern don't necessarily always have it their own way. But what is it, 9 years in a row they've won it. Yeah. if it's not great for the league, but for some reason the league, and I think it's more about production of players, young players, talent, incredible players. They play some decent football. They do well in European football, the German sides, obviously mostly Bayern, but then Dortmund are there or thereabouts, play some really attractive football that still creates an interest in the Bundesliga. But yes, someone else needs to try and get up there. Not even just one, another couple of clubs need to get up there and win the league.
Yeah, and Haaland came back to score a double for Dortmund. He could be potentially pushing Lewandowski for the golden boot race. But yeah, no, it is a great league. And Freiburg, out of nowhere, remain the only unbeaten team in the Bundesliga this season as well. So I think all it's missing, it reminds me of the Serie A a few years ago. It's doing very well, but all it's missing is that top, top team to be knocked off their perch. I'm going to go to the Serie A for a second, guys. Juve, Napoli, Milan, they all won. No surprises there. Inter, defending champions, they lost to Lazio. And at the very end of the game, Bridgie, we saw this one on the highlight show. At the very end of the game, Luis Felipe jumps on a former teammate of his, Correa, who's now at Inter celebrating. He gets sent off for it. Then he cries. Then a brawl breaks out. It was just mayhem. Is that a rightful red card, though?
He was going to take this one up. I don't think it's a red card. I think it's the manner that he did it, their teammates. But you can see why, because you don't, even if they're friends of yours and teammates, you can't rub the it in the wound like that after the final whistle. I think there could have been a little bit more common sense about it and it could have been handled differently. But I remember Martin Keown when Van Nistelrooy missed a penalty for Manchester United and Keown jumped on him and gave him a big slap around the back of the neck.
Yeah, he kind of didn't jump on him, but jumped up against him and chested him kind of thing, didn't he?
Give him
he?
A load of crap, you know, acting like an idiot.
That was a clear rubbing it in his face, where I don't think necessarily with what happened on the weekend in Lazio, Inter was necessarily a rubbing it in the face. I'm not sure. I mean, I know they were good mates, but I think obviously the referee sent it off because of what happened afterwards from that, right? So he's inciting whatever you want to call
inciting
it.
Inciting carnage and trouble, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we all know as football players and playing for various clubs, you know, you got to be very careful on how
it's sporty. The game was already heated up when Philip Anderson scored the goal where the player was down for Inter Milan and there was hell on about that, how they didn't kick the ball out. And again, for me, that was the correct decision because when that player was down, Inter Milan were on the attack and Inter Milan did not kick the ball out. So if it's good for one, it's good for the other.
Yeah. That's always the way though, isn't it? You see that so often, don't you?
Yeah.
We saw some insane red cards over the weekend. There was one in huge league, this one, the Northern Irish Premier League.
The goalkeeper, wasn't it?
That was Bobby
Burns.
You've got two goalkeepers on here and we've got Bobby Burns,
That's what I want to ask. I mean, Bobby Burns, former Newcastle Jets defender.
A lovely
kid
as well, by the way, Claude.
Was headbutted by his own goalkeeper after a goal went in. Tommy, why are you guys all so just strange up here? What's up with goalkeepers?
And that's why he gets paid the big bucks.
All right. Yeah, I think me and Sporty have heard that before. But you know, maybe we sort of outside the norm here. Me and Sporty, we're fairly level headed. I don't think we've, but it shows sometimes as a goalkeeper. You play with stupid defenders that can't. You know, I'm sure De Gea wanted to rip the head off Maguire the weekend for not dealing with his pass. But again, you know, when anything happens like this, you know, you got to keep control of your emotions. You know, I was on the pitch when Dier and who was it up at Newcastle? We played with
Lee Bowyer.
When
they started fighting each other and we were rubbing our hands. You know, there was two red cards right there and we were playing 11 against 9. So it does happen.
Tommy, you do know Lee Bowyer's nickname. We called him at Leeds the firework because he had the shortest fuse in the world. Yeah. I had a fight with him at a hotel once. He was just mental, but a lovely guy off the field. And then flick of a switch or light the fuse, off he went. Unbelievable.
Is that because neither of you would pay the bar bill? Is that what it was?
Actually, it was. It was over a food bill.
But has it come out if there was any underlying issues? Because that sometimes, that's sometimes what sort of gets people over the edge. If there was something off the pitch that is...
Do you know that incident that happened? Bobby Burns was at Newcastle United. Newcastle Jets. He had a nasty, nasty leg break last year when he went back to Ireland. Snapped his leg and he's gone through a lot of rehab. There was a tackle on the halfway line that Bobby didn't win in that game just before the goal went in. And he pulled out of the tackle. and they went up the other end and scored the goal. And Bobby couldn't get back to defend. And the goalkeeper has lost his blob because of that incident, seeing Bobby pulled out. And it shouldn't happen what had done, what had gone on. And I can see why the goalkeeper would be angry, but there's no need to react like that. Because if you know the players past in the history, they're going for that 50-50, Bobby is still not 100% right in the head and confident with his own body.
Yeah.
Back onto that Man United one with De Gea, Maguire. Maguire tried to blame De Gea as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
The ball went in the back of the net. That old chestnut.
Yeah. So, Tommy, were you at Sunderland with me with Lionel Perez?
No.
The goalkeeper, the flamboyant Frenchman.
Yeah.
There was him and Soda Bear or something.
Zuta Bear, that's right. That was the last time I saw a goalkeeper punch anybody, and it was our Christmas party. Lionel Perez was there. We were watching this comedian on stage, and Lionel Perez, 6'2" and about 5'5" wide as well. And his wife got up, and his wife was about 3'4", and she went over to go to the toilet, and the comedian started doing the Oompa Loompa Doompa Dee Day song over the microphone.
Oh, no.
And the whole place, players and wives, started laughing. But Lionel Perez just got up, marched through, and knocked the comedian out on stage. And that was the end of our Christmas party. So there you go. Fantastic.
Yeah, I want to know, did you go straight home after that?
No, I was out. We went to town. I was at Annabelle's in town. And we were laughing all night long, singing the Oompa Loompa Doompa Dee Day.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't expect anything less from you, Bridgie. Just sticking with our trip around Europe, players who get in a bit of trouble hitting the town. Mauro Icardi, we spoke about him on the weekend as well. More dramas with him than a Spanish soap opera, Schwartzy. I mean, this guy, decent player on the park, off the park, not quite. Wanda Icardi, the thing is, she's not only his partner, but she's also his football agent. And she's now broken up with him, said that you broken another family for her. I'm not going to use the word she describes, another lady. So probably not the smartest thing to do when she's your football agent. He could be ending up at MacArthur Bulls next season like that.
Talk about an absolute train wreck, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. Where do you even start with it? I don't even think you bother even going there. I mean,
His current wife now, who's no longer his wife, used to be the wife of Maxi Lopez.
Yeah, that's right.
And Icardi stole her off him, yeah?
And they were mates as well, yeah.
So, yes, there's only one person laughing now, and it's Maxi Lopez, isn't it? Anyway.
I don't think he explains any judgment, really.
No, exactly.
Right. I think it just sums up him as a player, where he is in his career. And he's like obviously hugely talented, but has sort of stuttered along the way. I mean, his goal scoring record at Inter Milan was insane, absolutely insane. But he had moments at PSG, but for some reason, there's obviously a character issue. Mm. And, you know, he's on the outer again.
Well, he's one of the latest names to be linked to Newcastle United as well.
Well, there's plenty of lasses in the tune for him.
Yeah, exactly right. Might be a match made in heaven. Let's look forward to the football coming up this week. We will go back to the Premier League in a second, but I wanted to ask you guys about the Matildas as well, because we're very excited at Optus Sport, the fact that we are showing the Women's World Cup here, Australia-New Zealand 2023. So preparations are well and truly underway. The Matildas have had a bit of mixed form coming into this. They're now about to play Brazil on home soil. A couple controversies to come out of the camp as well. Schwartzy, I'll start with you. Preparation for the Matildas team, is it on track or is it looking a little bit worrying?
No, certainly what's happened with obviously the news with Lisa Devana, the accusations, the stories. Listen, it's got to be a disrupting moment in the squad. The players must be finding it difficult. Obviously, the new manager as well is still trying to get his messages across, his solid play across, and they've had some difficult results, bad results, really, from what we expect, have expected from the Matildas. And I think this is what happened, you know, in 2019 at the World Cup. It was the first time, I think, certainly the first time that the Matildas had literally a massive spotlight on them and the media attention was there. And there were moments where you could see that some of the players didn't react well to it. Any sort of criticism, there was a lot of expectations. And that's where they are now. Obviously, World Cup's going to be in Australia. Everything is focused on the girls and their preparation, and every game will be scrutinized. Every performance will be scrutinized. And off-field distractions are not great. And let's just hope it gets sorted out as quickly as possible.
Tommy,
just back to that. I think, I think the Olympics were encouraging. I think Gustafsson, obviously, when he took over, they got smashed in three or four friendlies in Europe. I had big question marks when they went into the Olympics. But I actually think they showed a lot of character in a lot of those games. You could sort of start to see a team coming together. And obviously, with Kerr up front, you got that match winner. But again, I don't think this all these issues, accusations, I don't think it's not going to help. Thank God that the World Cup is still a couple of years away. So that can sort of hopefully get sorted. But I agree with Schwartz. I think it's going to be scrutinized now and they have to get used to it. There's going to be expectations and Gustafsson's got a job on his hands for sure.
And a massive positive for the Matildas girls and obviously any other up and coming star or player in this country. The amount of girls that are playing in that Premier League and around Europe in the Super Leagues, it's brilliant, because if you're playing football on a regular basis at the highest level possible, it can only help you at national level. So I think that's fantastic that this opportunity has arose for a lot of the girls in Europe.
I think importantly is how well they're doing as well. So, you know, Hayley Russo obviously going to Manchester City, which was a big, big move for her. Obviously, City haven't done so well so far, but, you know, they're a big club and high expectations of their women's team. Sam Kerr, I think, is kind of, I think for a lot of people, doing what they expect her to do. But I think the challenge of playing in Europe was a big challenge for her. And she said that she found it difficult to begin with, the temperature, the conditions, the type of style of football. And I think it's going to make her a better player so long as the Matildas actually play a better brand of football as well at times. Because even at the Olympics at times, you know, I know you're chasing a game, you're knocking the ball long, you're trying to get the ball in the box, so forth. You know, we need to make sure that we utilize the strengths of the girls. Ellie Carpenter being at Lyon, that's a massive, massive move for her. She's done incredibly well there. So
she's my favorite player.
Yeah, she's brilliant. So hopefully they continue to grow. You know, a couple of the girls are at Steph Catley, Caitlin Ford at Arsenal. You know, Mackenzie Arnold. Let's hope these girls just get better and better and come the World Cup. They're in top form, and hopefully for the national team, they're playing some great football.
Yeah, it's a really good time for them to go overseas as well, seeing what's happened with the domestic football. We've been stopped for so long. A-League women's now starting a bit later, and it's a shorter season too. So it's great for these girls to be getting that experience around the world. And I think we all can't wait for that World Cup on home soil. And happy just to see live football here being played in Sydney. That's going to be exciting as well. Guys, I'm conscious of time, but we're going to go back to the Prem. Some big games coming up this weekend. I want to ask you about a few of them. Tommy, your former club, Aston Villa, tough loss this weekend, leading 2-0. In the final 10 minutes, it was a train wreck against Wolves. They now travel to the Emirates against Arsenal, another side which will be trying to get back to winning ways. How do you see this one panning out on Saturday morning?
I think, Villa showed what they need to do against Man United a couple of weeks ago. They're going to sit back. They're going to, hit the Arsenal on the counter, a little bit like Crystal Palace. I think they're fairly solid. I think they were unlucky at the weekend. I think they actually played well. And we know in football, momentum, a few things. I actually think that, Wolves, Bruno Lage, I think he made some good substitutions, got that first goal, and then suddenly you're on the back foot. And we've all been on the end of sort of late comebacks where you're in control and you lose. So I'm not too worried. And I actually think they can go and win this one down at the Emirates. I think they're fairly solid as a team. I think they've got a good team this season.
12th against 3rd, 12th against 13th, that game will be an interesting one. But I'm going to move to a top four clash for you, Schwartzy. We wouldn't have thought that this would be a top four clash. 4th against 3rd, Brighton, Man City. I guess tests don't come bigger than this for Potter. What do you think about this one and how do you see it going?
It's a massive game, isn't it? And it's a great indicator to tell you where Brighton are. And I'm sure for Graham Potter, they'll be thinking the same. Brighton have done pretty well the last couple of seasons at home against Man City. They've always given them a really, really tough game. So, I'm looking forward to it. But again, the issue with Brighton is where will the goals come from? Will they continue to score goals against obviously one of the best teams, certainly in Europe, if not the world, in Man City. So it's a game that obviously, who's going to have more possession? That's the other question. Yeah. So many questions to answer with that game.
Possession,
I don't know.
Possession doesn't win your games, Mark.
I know.
It's who puts the ball in the back of the net, and it'll be Man City.
I know. Mm. And who's most likely to do that? Man City, exactly. Yeah. But Brighton, like I said, at home, you know, don't underestimate them, and they've got a good, decent record of late against Man City.
And Man City coming off the back of European football as well. It's always a busy schedule, and you just never know. Brighton get the full week off. Bridgie, the biggest game this weekend. It is the old derby of the two most successful teams in English football, Man United up against Liverpool. Again, both these teams are playing Champions League football midweek, but Liverpool play FC Porto and they have an extra day's rest. How do you see this one turning out at Old Trafford?
Anybody that goes to Old Trafford, you know, in years gone by, it was always a tough place. It's an easier place. Man United had their best away record. Obviously, that was broken. When did they get done? What was that last game, wasn't it?
Leicester.
Yeah. Thank you. Cheers. God, time flies. I really feel the way Liverpool are playing at this moment in time. I think Mark Swartz mentioned it several weeks ago that they were back to playing the best football that we have seen them play in a long time. And it's just continuing on. I can't see the trend changing. I think Liverpool will go there tactically. They are far more influential because of the man at the helm in Klopp. And defensively, they're far more structured because of Van Dijk and the organisation. And going forward, they've got more organisation. Away win, Liverpool, go the Reds. Not the Red Devils.
That'll mount more pressure on Ollie. And do you think that for that midweek clash, Man United, are they beating Atalanta?
Oh, I don't want to upset too many Man United fans, but no, I think it'll be a draw. But Atalanta, man, go amount of goals and the way they're playing football, they're a pleasure to watch at this moment in time as well. I really, really enjoy it and have done for the last 2 or 3 years, really. When they lose players, they still manage to get the dynamics of the team and they find a way.
Definitely. Well, we're treated to football every day. We've got Champions League, obviously, throughout the week. Then we got Premier League Saturday morning and right all the way through to Monday and throughout the next week. So we're sport for choice here on Optus Sport. We've gone a little bit over time, guys. We had a bit of Fergie time. Bridgie has more to add. Go on, Bridge.
I've got Fergie time coming. One more question. You've got the old legendary Chelsea shirt on. Mm. Yeah. From 97. Yep. It's yellow. And they this weekend are playing the Canaries. You mentioned the lack of opportunities goals. How many is Lukaku going to get this weekend against Norwich?
You know, I don't think it's going to be a drubbing.
I don't think so.
I think they'll be focusing after that Juventus loss. I think a lot of the focus will go into the Champions League midweek.
Malmo. They should beat Malmo at home, surely.
Yeah, you should surely. Have to get 6 points against Malmo to go to top that group. Against Norwich, I think it'll be a comfortable 2-0. Lukaku gets one and gets that.
Yeah, I'm going for 4+.
You think so?
4+, yeah. I think they're going to hammer them.
I'm going 3. Let's not forget as well, there's another big game on the weekend, West Ham Spurs. That's a big, big game, you know.
And Derby, that's right. Yeah.
It's very, very spicy between the two sets of fans as well. So looking forward to that. West Ham and the form that they're in. Spurs, obviously, let's say, really good result.
Football fans. Swartzy, have you seen Football Factory?
No, I haven't, no.
Football Factory, good movie for you, and Green Streets, if you want to check out the West Ham, the West Ham Hard Boys, or Hooligans, as they call them. Two very good movies.
There you go.
And while we're adding games to it, Tommy, this is another cracker as well. I mean, I left it out, but Brentford-Leicester, what a game that is. Who's winning that?
Well, you know, I would love to see, you know, Brentford again. I think they, you know, I love just the way they are set up. I love the you know, the philosophy that Thomas Frank is putting in there. So actually, I could see them getting one past Leicester. So I'm tipping Brent.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm just going to give the other ones a wrap, Claude. So we've got Crystal Palace against Newcastle on Sunday morning at 1 a.m. At the same time, Leeds against Wolves, Everton against Watford, and Southampton against Burnley. The good thing about that is we've got that goal rush on at 1 a.m. and you don't miss a moment or a goal in the action there. But there won't be any at Southampton Burnley. That'll be 0-0, but the rest of them are going to be classics.
The other thing is, let's not forget, you talk about that Brentford game. Leicester are away on the Wednesday, away in Moscow against Spartak Moscow. That's a, I mean, Brentford, high intensity. It's a big challenge for them there. After the back of Man United game, going to be definitely testing their squad, that's for sure.
Yeah, that'll be a tough, always tough with these, I'd say smaller clubs, but when they get into European football, always tough to juggle that with a thinner squad. Guys, I'm going to say goodbye for now. Got a huge week coming up. Schwartzy, it is probably way past your bedtime over there in the UK. You got any plans for tonight?
No, mate, not anymore now, mate. No, I've got to go to bed, mate. I've got to look after myself, get my beauty sleep. I was up early this morning playing golf, so I've got to go to bed again.
Takes him 30 minutes to lock his house up, because by the time he walks from his east wing of his mansion to the west wing, it's a long, long walk.
Golf in the mornings is a tough life to be Mark Schwartzer at the moment, isn't it?
It is.
Coming back from holiday in Spain, and now you have to play golf. And
I know. I don't know how I fit it in, honestly.
Tommy, thanks for joining me. You got any big plans for the day?
Oh, hopefully the sun is shining. Get outside. I'm not playing golf, but I might get on my bike. Looking forward to that.
I see you got a bit of a tan going at the moment. I know Michael Bridges has been top off tanning in the backyard recently. Bridgie, any plans? We're shooting together, aren't we?
I'm waiting for you to get in the studio, and hopefully you're not late. And we've got some preview shows to do together. So you get to hear my dulcet tones once again. You're lucky boy.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot more Michael Bridges, but that's okay. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Gagan Pod. As you heard it, plenty of football coming up on Optus Sport. You can catch us next week. Guess what? Julian Nagelsmann will be back if I didn't get the sack for my late arrival this morning to dive in and dissect all of it. Thanks, guys, and have a good week.